those kinds of projects done thoughtfully and consistently can really move the needle for us in the North.
Welcome to the Destination Northern Ontario podcast. This is a series for tourism business operators here in the rugged and beautiful North. Whether you're just starting out or you've got years under your belt, this podcast will make sure you're well equipped for the journey. I'm your host, Michelle Sampson. Northern Ontario is big, really big, which can be a challenge when you're trying to get from one city to another or to escape into its great wilderness. The state of the North's transportation, from roads to air to rail, is critical for its economy, especially for the tourism industry. That's why Destination Northern Ontario is making it a priority. Ian Wood is a director on Destination Northern Ontario's board of directors and the chair of its ad hoc committee on transportation issues. In this episode, we chat about the current state of the road, air, and rail networks, what could and should be done to improve them, and what you can do to help. To kick things off, I asked Ian to summarize why transportation is so important to tourism in Northern Ontario and why there's a need to put transportation in the spotlight right now.
So transportation really is foundational to the work in tourism. It's not a direct responsibility of Destination Northern Ontario, but as most people would know, Northern Ontario is an extremely large place, which means that our visitors, our tourists, often have to travel a long way to get here. And once they're here, if they really want to see some of the region, they need to travel a lot within the region. Transportation for tourism overall is important as well. We don't have Northern Ontario numbers, but we do know that in Ontario as a whole, in 2024, the expenditures on tourism were almost $5 billion, which is almost 17% of the tourism spend is on transportation. So it's not insignificant. And in Northern Ontario, it's more important because of the size of the region that we're dealing with. In terms of why now? So let me just say that what we're talking about is an initiative of the Destination Northern Ontario Board of Directors. Coming out of COVID, we were spending a lot of time talking about some of the issues around transportation. And really, it was air transportation that was the key for us. And I can even take you to an event. 2 years ago now, Thunder Bay was hosting the Canada Winter Games or Canada Games Winter Edition. And they actually had some of the sporting bodies and some of the events canceled simply because people couldn't get there from across Canada. Or it was too expensive for them to get there. So sports like weightlifting, even downhill skiing, which for Thunder Bay is a great sport, the organizing bodies just said, we can't make this work. We can't get our people in and out. There's not enough flights, not enough seats. And what is available is too expensive. And that was a bit of a wake-up call for us. We spend a lot of time trying to promote our region, and hosting major events like that is really critical to our success and our growth. And when you go to all the effort to stage something like that and then have parts of it be unsuccessful simply because of transportation, we decided as a board that we wanted to take a little bit deeper dive into what was going on here. And we created an ad hoc committee of board members. I agreed to chair that committee at that point. So about a year and a half, almost 24 months ago now.
So tell me more about that committee and what it hopes to accomplish.
So while we got together, we decided that air transportation would be our first focus, and it was for our first 6-8 months. And then a little bit over a year ago, we decided to add in road and rail issues to look at those as well. But we started by talking to folks specifically involved in aviation. So we talked to airport managers and municipalities across Northern Ontario. We talked to other organizations that we thought might be of interest as well, so like chambers of commerce and municipal associations, those types of things. And we really wanted to get a sense of what was going on, and we did do that. We staged a panel discussion at our tourism summit a year ago in North Bay, and that was very enlightening and positive. And coming out of that discussion, we started to feel like we might have something to say and to communicate both within the industry and to other organizations, and then specifically to governments at all three levels. So over the course of 2025, we've tried to pull together the information, put our thoughts together, and we produced a document, an issues paper that we can circulate to bring a tourism perspective to others involved in the transportation area.
Yeah, so we'll link that document in the show notes. But this episode is really going to be covering a lot of the highlights from that report. We're going to get into what you heard from these stakeholders around the issues and challenges, but also some solutions and opportunities as well. Maybe let's take a step back and do a lay of the land to start. We know, obviously, Northern Ontario has roads and air and rail, but maybe we can get into a little bit more detail than that.
Sure. Let me go back to talking about the size again, because I think even for people who live and work and have grown up in Northern Ontario, we sometimes forget about the size and how big it is and how far things are. So our area, RTO 13, they call us, Northern Ontario Tourism Region, it stretches from the border with Renfrew County, which is near Mattawa on the east side, and all the way to the Manitoba border. Right along that route is Highway 17. So Highway 17 runs from border to border, east-west across our region. And that's 1,750 kilometers, which is a long, long way. And just to reinforce how far that is, if you go the other way, so if you start on the eastern border and you go east, 1,750 kilometers takes you to Halifax.
Yep, I've done that drive.
Yeah, me too.
It's long.
Yeah, exactly. And if you go the other way from the Manitoba border going west, you're into Golden, BC.
Wow.
So you're actually across the Alberta border and into British Columbia. So that's the dimension of Northern Ontario and why transportation is so important. So our part of our fact finding or research on this area, we came across the statistic that 94% of visitors to Northern Ontario arrive by road.
Wow. Huge majority.
Yeah. Although we, like I say, we were triggered by concerns around air. Certainly, you know, the meat of the issues are in roads. There's 11,000 kilometers of provincial highways within Northern Ontario. Things are a long way apart. And, you know, when it comes to roads, it's Trans-Canada Highway, but not all of it is four lane. In fact, much less of it is four lane than in other jurisdictions. So those are the things that, when you start looking at it in depth, you start seeing sort of what the challenges are, but also how things could be improved over time to make it more efficient, safer, and more attractive, quite frankly, for visitors.
That's a lot to maintain, too.
It is a lot to maintain. Maintain and renew, right? Because, you know, highways get old and infrastructure gets old, but it's important to keep it in the forefront. The Trans-Canada Highway is critical infrastructure to the entire country. Coming up on 10 years ago, some folks might remember we had a brand new bridge in Nipigon, Ontario that had a failure. I mean, it was quite a new bridge and it failed in the winter cold, which was completely unexpected. But when that bridge cut off, that's the only way to cross this country by road. A single crossing at that time. It's twinned now, but it's still the same. You know, those two bridges are 100 feet apart crossing the Nipigon River.
Yeah.
And, you know, it shows you how vital that connection is. 1,300 trucks a day use that to cross. And those are trucks that are moving long journeys east-west. It's worth mentioning, again, the lack of four-lane highway or cross-sections. Even the Scandinavian solution, they call it a 2+1, which is essentially, you have three lanes and the passing lane switches back and forth every 10 kilometers or so. That is coming, apparently, to Northern Ontario. So we're anxious to see that. But all of these things take a long time in arriving. And so I think it's worth us continually talking about the need, because hopefully that leads to changes in the future. Visitor services along our highway, if 94% of our visitors are coming by road, and we look in other jurisdictions like Quebec and Michigan, and they have these, or even Southern Ontario, they have these great wayside services. You know, it's got a restaurant, really nice washrooms, and well-kept.
The en routes.
The en routes, yeah. But yeah. In Quebec, you know, they have proper picnic facilities and, mm-hmm. and washrooms and places for people to have a snooze, and Michigan the same. And in Northern Ontario, we just don't have that. And some of them that we did have, you know, have been closed in the last 10 years. So, so that's something, again, that we don't see enough of. And then the last real concern is that we still have gaps in mobile service, even on our major highways. And people who travel tell me that the gaps are larger in terms of high-speed data. So, you know, even when you can get a phone call through, you know, you can't necessarily do your business. So there's lots of room for improvement there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how about air?
So as I said earlier, coming out of COVID, air was the one that really created the sore thumb that attracted our attention. I mean, everybody knows that in COVID, air travel basically stopped, right? Flights were cut and people laid off in the airline industry, et cetera, et cetera. But coming out of COVID, there was sort of an expectation that we would be back to 2019. And, you know, in the beginning, they said, oh, well, in a year, we'll be back to where we were in 2019. And then they said, oh, maybe take a little longer. Maybe it'll take 2 or 3 years. And the reality is, in Northern Ontario, we're still nowhere near where we were in 2019 in terms of the level of passenger air service across the north. There's fewer flights. And in some areas like Kenora and Dryden, for example, they lost their air service completely, their scheduled air service. It doesn't exist, although there's a new one coming, and we can talk about that. But it continues on. I mean, North Bay, in January 2026, they'll have their last Air Canada Connector flight to Toronto, a service that's been in place, they tell me, since the 1940s.
Wow.
And it's very difficult to maintain tourism connections, business connections, general economic development connections when you don't have scheduled air service and the easy connection to Toronto. And we're lucky in some ways, because in Ontario, we have Canada's busiest airport and we have a fantastic global gateway in Pearson. But if you're not connected to it, then it doesn't help you. One of the things we did in the spring of this year was sent a little note to our provincial and federal ministers. And we talked about places like Saskatoon and Quebec City having better connections into Toronto, into Pearson, than the major cities in Northern Ontario. And it seems to me that the province should maybe be thinking about that, right? From economic development, from a tourism, from a business development and growth perspective. Mm-hmm. It's so important for us.
Yeah.
I mean, there are economic reasons for this. There were pilot shortages coming out of COVID. So airlines really took the opportunity to upgrade their fleets and they put on larger aircraft. Larger aircraft don't necessarily make economic sense for the smaller centers that we are. Mm. And so then that ends up with reduced frequency. There's no longer a first of the morning flight into Pearson, which connects you to the world. So businesses, which in some ways are the lifeblood of keeping these air connections viable, they start choosing to drive or other methods of transportation. And then that reduces the opportunities for both leisure outbound travel, but also visitors coming in. So it's a bit of a vicious circle. And, you know, in Canada, airports across Canada deliver positive revenue to the federal government, like real money. It's a revenue stream for them, which is different than many other countries. Many other countries see their airports as a public service that needs to be invested in by the government. That's true in the States. They subsidize airports. They subsidize routes as essential routes. We don't have that in Canada. So it makes a challenging economic situation for the managers of airports and their municipal owners, where, you know, they have to charge more to the fewer passengers that use their services, which ends up increasing fees and airfares. And again, it's a negative reinforcement cycle.
Right. Yeah, we'll talk more about air, but I just want to get that lay of the land of rail. There's less going on there, but there are some things to say.
Yeah, I mean, railways are foundational to Northern Ontario, right? I mean, the two national main lines run right across the north. VIA continues to provide a service on using the Canadian, although I don't want to sound negative about a tourism product, but it really is basically only a tourism product at this point. It doesn't provide a lot in terms of intra-city transportation. But, you know, in the summertime, there's paddlers, even on that national train, there are paddlers loading their canoes on to get off in northwestern Ontario and explore, which is great. I mean, that is part of our tourism economy, but it only runs a couple of times a week. And so the daily aspect of it has gone long ago. And it's often not on time because freight takes precedent with the railways. And that's the structure that the government has set up with VIA. So in terms of infrastructure, we've got first-class infrastructure there. But in terms of passenger rail, it's not really fully utilized, and there's a lot more potential for that. The province of Ontario has an interest in rail in northern Ontario and are in the midst of bringing back the Ontario Northlander train, which will connect Toronto and Cochrane. Great. I mean, I think that should be launched in mid-2026. So we're getting closer and closer to that. The schedule and the equipment are really designed around a local population. So this is really, I'd call it a pilot. I mean, it's been out of service for a good number of years and they're bringing it back. So we're excited to see it come back. We're really interested in the potential for tourism in the future. I don't know that the pilot will even have the capacity. It's just 130 seats going each way on a daily basis. But hopefully it'll prove successful and we'll look at potential of future services that can better address the tourism potential. I mean, rail, it's historic, as I said, it's environmentally superior to road traffic. And there really isn't any experience that duplicates how close you are. I mean, we try to market our wilderness, right? Mm-hmm. And that train right of way is, I don't know, 40 feet across. And, you know, you're often traveling right next to lakes and through the forest. I took the train up to Kenora from Sudbury last summer. It's really a great experience and one that I think is eminently marketable. There's things like the Rocky Mountaineer and other parts of Canada, and there's a tourist train up near Saguenay out of Quebec City. And I mean, we have the Agua Canyon train. I don't want to minimize that. But there are many more opportunities, I think, for those kinds of experiences in Northern Ontario.
Great. So, you know, we've kind of given the doom and gloom, but we want to bring the bright side here and really want to dig into all of those. Where do you want to start? Road, air, or rail?
Let's start with air. We have done a fair amount of work and a lot of conversations around air. And there is no question that from an economic development and from a high-level business perspective, that air connections are really important, especially, as I say, when Southern Ontario has one of the world's best airports. Making that last mile connection into Northern Ontario is really important for us. We think that, quite frankly, the federal government needs to take another look at how medium-sized airports, and we'll call them that for our region, how they're funded and how they can encourage more air services and passenger services in this area. It's not just leaving it up to the airlines. Of course, airlines will make an economic business decision and we can't fault them for that. But this is an area where it's important that from a community and from an overall economic development perspective, that they challenge this and become innovative in terms of how they can address that and make things a little more cost effective, both for the passengers and for the airlines. That's on the federal side. And that's not even just Northern Ontario. That's right across Canada. All the medium-sized cities have the same challenge.
Yeah.
From the provincial side, it's interesting. So the province, at first blush, have said to us that aviation is federal responsibility, that we don't really have responsibility there. And I guess, you know, as a first go, maybe that's fine. But I talked about the size of Northern Ontario, and the fact remains that people in Saskatoon have more options to get to Toronto and back by air than people in Sudbury or Timmins or Sault Ste. Marie. And to me, there's a policy piece here that I think that the provincial government could take a closer look at, again, because of the economic development importance of air transport. There are some new initiatives that have taken place or are taking place A lot of these are being developed by municipalities and airports in partnership with airlines. So, and they call them shared risk. So basically it varies, but in general, a municipality or an airport is putting up a pool of money, which the airline can use to defray empty seats. You know, we'll lay on an aircraft to fly back and forth to Toronto, or in Sudbury's case, we had a flight, direct flight into Calgary from June to October of this year. And the negotiation happens that the airline says they need a 65% capacity or whatever to be met in order to make this viable for them. And a type of financial guarantee is made so that when the seat sales fall short of that capacity, that the difference is made up. So that's the shared risk aspect of it. And I mean, again, I understand where this is coming from a business perspective, but municipalities and airports don't have the kind of financial resources that provinces and federal governments do.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a place that the province could look at. What does that mean? Can we get involved with this? What does it mean for us from an economic development perspective, from a visitor perspective, from a tourism growth perspective? And can we make the economic case that we should be involved in that? And I think that's a serious conversation that the province could have.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that from an air perspective, that's where we're at. And there are multiple folks. I talked about Chambers of Commerce. There are associations of airports, and they are singing the same song and working at that. I think our role is just to say, we think this is something worth looking at. And from a tourism perspective, we see the benefit for us and for our industry.
Absolutely. All right, where do you want to go next for opportunities? Road or rail?
Well, let's talk about the rail lines. So the lines were built by the railways. They're owned by the railways. It's their game, but they are regulated by the federal government. And I think that there has to be room for a passenger rail conversation other than the Quebec City to Windsor corridor. I think that we need our government representatives to sit down and say, there are many advantages to rail passenger traffic, and we need to figure out how we can make this work and reset the relationship. It's a fascinating industry. I don't pretend to understand the economics of it all. Freight trains get longer and longer and longer. You know, a mile and a half is not unusual anymore.
Wow.
And where passengers can fit in, I think there just needs serious people on both sides of the table having good discussions. VIA is a federal corporation. I think they will do what they're told. So it would be good if they were asked to take things a little more seriously outside of that Windsor to Quebec City corridor. I know we're engaged in looking at a high-speed train in that area, and that's great. But I think that there are real opportunities in the rest of the country and in our area, region specifically, that they can explore. And I think if the relationship is reset, if there's opportunities for private sector operators like Rocky Mountain Rail to look for opportunities in Northern Ontario, I think there could be really good, valid rail excursion opportunities that would be attractive to bringing in tourism. And those kind of tours, people will come from a very long way for rail tours. I said I took the train from Sudbury to Kenora last summer, and most of the people in the dining car were not from Canada, because they're doing the Toronto-Vancouver train that's been on their bucket list for 10 years. So they're flying from Germany, from Australia, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And those are high yield, high value visitors that we could all benefit from. And I think the facilitation of the railways to help with that would be great. We're going to talk about the federal government's nation building projects for roads as well. But I think that if they were to make a move to twin the rail lines, huge benefit for us in tourism, but also I think for freight and for moving some of the freight off of highways and into something that's efficient and safe and net positive for all of us.
So just because, I mean, rail is so romantic in so many ways, right? Yeah. I guess like step one would be frequency and reliability. And then once that piece is kind of settled, then you kind of get into those excursions and really building up the experience.
I mean, yes and no. I think they're almost two separate tracks. Bad pun. But anyway, but yeah, if I use Rocky Mountain Rail, And they started from Calgary to Vancouver because there was no passenger train there anymore. It had been moved to the Edmonton side. That's where VIA runs. But it was the part of the old Canadian route on Canadian Pacific that was seen as, you know, incredibly scenic. And that's why Rocky Mountain Rail Tours started there. But they are now running two or three trains out of Vancouver on different routes. They're running two trains in the States now. They've expanded into the States. They're choosing sections of track that have an anchor community at either end and are very scenic, almost like a cruise boat on rails.
Mm.
If the space were found on the rails, that could almost happen in very short order. Getting the priority for passengers to run them on time and efficiently and that kind of thing is another question. It will be very interesting to see how successful the Ontario Northlander is, because a portion of it is on tracks that are fully controlled by Ontario Northland, but a portion of it is also on CN tracks. So it'll be interesting to see as they implement that, because that's at the forefront of their planning too. We want to make this an efficient service. We want to make it a viable alternative to driving. And so that's a task that they've set for themselves. And as they bring that forward, it'll be good to see how that works out and where they can go from there. But I think the real, as I said earlier, VIA is essentially a creature of the government. And I think if the government tasks them with doing something, that they'll respond. But it's been a long time since anything like that has happened.
All right, let's move on to road.
Yeah, so the roads, I think, are in some ways simpler in what needs to be done. But in other ways, you know, much more complex. I talked about this Highway 17 itself across our region is 1,750 kilometers. That's a long, long way if you're going to figure out how to twin it, how to create those four-lane sections. Having said that, though, I know the drive to the Maritimes, and I can tell you that I started doing regular drives to Nova Scotia in 2000, so 25 years ago, because my daughter started at Dalhousie at that point. In those 25 years, from where I turned off of the four lanes at Rivière-du-Loup, all the way through to the Cobequid Pass, the investment that's happened from those provinces, but largely by the federal government helping those provinces make those four lanes happen. I mean, it pretty much will be four-laned within the next year or two, and it will be completely four-laned all the way from the main highway in Quebec all the way through to Halifax and basically all the way to Cape Breton. That project was incredible. It's daunting, but over the course of time, it's happened. And I think declaring it and saying we're going to get there and we're going to provide consistent funding and get at it year on year, eventually it happens. So I think that really is the key for the main 11 and 17 in Northern Ontario. Now, the province is committed to this 2+1 system going north out of North Bay up towards, I'm trying to think of where it's, well, Nyliskard anyway, I think is where the first target is. So that'll be great to see. I've driven in Northern Sweden. I've seen this in action and it's far less expensive to build. But the results in Sweden have been dramatic in terms of the reduction in terms of accidents. And that's really from a tourism perspective. We want people to be able to feel comfortable and not be intimidated by the distances and feel safe on our roads. That's what we're looking for. Yeah. And the people who live here, I know, are feeling the same. But we think that those kinds of projects done thoughtfully and consistently can really move the needle for us in the north. The other thing we would really recommend and would love to see is that some serious thought be given to visitor services when they're planning these projects. Think about where that stopping point is going to be, the facilities that you need for truckers and for the average person to, again, to feel comfortable and safe on our highways. And that's what we're all looking for. The data and mobile phone coverage, I think, again, probably it needs some serious conversations with the providers, but that doesn't seem insurmountable. Some of the others seem much more daunting than solving that problem. But these things need to be brought to people's attention, or it's really the pace that we'd like to see stepped up.
Right. I mean, yeah, the feds have invested so much in getting high-speed internet and data out to rural communities that the next frontier really seems like the highways after that point. So we're going to cross our fingers. We're going to hope that does happen. So I think you've already covered my next question about what DNO is doing, unless there's something else you want to put in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we produced this paper, we're circulating it. We can't dictate anything. In fact, we're not mandated to do so. And so our role is really to bring a perspective that's a valid perspective on behalf of our industry and encourage people to consider what options might be available and to put some thought and some emphasis behind it. We continue to work with other organizations. So the Northwestern Ontario Municipal Association and the Federation of Northern Ontario Municipalities, which is the Northeastern Municipal Association, they went together to Ottawa basically to ask for the four-laning to be a national project under the terms that the federal government is looking for. And hopefully our voice helps a little bit in those kind of initiatives. Tourism Industry Association of Ontario, Tourism Industry Association of Canada, we've communicated this to them, and Destination Ontario and TIO have identified access as priorities for them moving forward. That's what we're talking about. It's all about getting people in and out and having them find their way around in a safe and effective manner. I'm not claiming that we instigated any of this, but we're helping to move the conversation along and make sure it's not forgotten.
Yeah. And, you know, there's tourism operators who will be listening as well. Is there anything that they can do to help?
I mean, yes. Whenever operators are having conversations, but especially with local governments or their MPPs, remember that the importance of transportation and reinforce it. Nothing communicates more effectively than a story, right? So if there's an operator who's got a story about either effective transportation or a transportation issue that's caused them real grief, those kind of things, feel free to share those. That's how people will remember and will encourage, you know, movement in these areas.
Kind of brings us full circle back to your story about the Canada Games.
Yeah, exactly.
It really does illustrate how a problem can impact things on the ground, and similarly how solutions and opportunities could push things forward. So I think that's a great piece of advice for them. All right, one second last question, I suppose. If I could give you a magic wand, Ian, and you could get one thing on your wish list done, what would it be? What is that top priority?
Yeah, I think I would have to agree with the municipal associations and talk about, I mean, if 94% of our visitors are coming by road and moving around by road, then finding a way to accelerate the pace of making especially our Trans-Canada Highway, four-lane, safe, efficient, resistant to closures by weather and accidents. You know, if that were to become a nation-building project for the next 20 to 25 years, that would be my wish list. Yeah.
Amazing. I hate to break it to you, I do not have a magic wand, but we're doing our best to get the message out with this episode.
Sure.
Any final thoughts before we close this out, Ian?
No, I appreciate the opportunity. I hope the people who are listening will translate just a little bit into action. And because you just never know who you're going to be speaking with next, or who you speak to next, who's going to be speaking to somebody else, and where that's going to lead to. And so really, that's all we can do, is to continue to talk about things and recognize the importance to our industry of moving these kind of things forward, because that's where growth will come from.
All right. Well, I'll reiterate again that the report that you guys prepared will be linked in the show notes. So if anybody needs a cheat sheet for their conversations, that's a good resource for them. Thank you so much, Ian.
Oh, thank you, Michelle. This is great.
Just a quick postscript here. The North Bay Airport, which Ian noted is losing its Air Canada route to Toronto, has gotten some good news since we recorded this interview. Prop Air has announced that starting in February 2026, it will be flying from North Bay to Billy Bishop Airport in Toronto with a shuttle to Pearson. And as of January 2026, North Star Air is flying between Kenora and Thunder Bay, filling a gap left by Bearskin Airlines back in 2024. Sometimes when one airplane door closes, another opens. If you're a tourism business operator looking for more resources on product development, human resources, marketing, or partnerships, visit destinationnorthernontario.ca or any of the links in the show notes. New episodes of this podcast are coming soon. Follow us on your favorite podcast platform to be notified when it drops. Destination Northern Ontario is produced by Storied Places Media and hosted by me, Michelle Sampson. Thanks for listening.